Vice President Austin?
Here.
President Wing?
Here. Will you stand for the flag salute? I'll lead it. Attention, salute.
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Thank you. Go ahead and have the agenda review. Are there any changes? Don't hear any changes.
I don't have any changes.
May I entertain a motion then?
I move we approve the agenda as presented.
Second.
All in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? Carries 3-0. Move on to closed session. Would Councillor Minery like to? Oh, and I need to call for a public comment on closed session. Seeing that there's no one in the audience, we'll move forward to announce closed session.
The board has two items on closed session. 5A, pursuant to Government Code Section 54956.9A. This is conference with legal counsel regarding the Santa Maria Valley Water Conservation District. Item 5B, pursuant to Government Code 54956.9D2, conference with district legal counsel regarding anticipated litigation. There are two matters to be discussed.
Thank you. We'll move into closed session now.
She had to go to the dentist.
Just announce that they've joined.
I think
like to resume general session. It is 6:06 p.m. I'd like to announce that during closed session, board members Renee and Angelo joined us. So we're now full five members on the board are here. Also need to move on to public comment we need to report out of closed session, sorry.
Report out of closed session was there was no reportable action and direction was given to staff and legal counsel.
Thank you very much. Now move on to item 6 on the agenda, public comment for items not on the agenda. This public comment period provides an opportunity for members of the public to address the board on matters of interest within the jurisdiction of the district that are not listed on the agenda. If a member of the public wishes to speak at this time, public comment is limited to 3 minutes. And I don't see anybody coming forward. So we can move on to item number 7, special presentations and reports, starting with Operations Field Superintendent Tony Maraschino.
Good evening, board. Tony Maraschino. All right, so Lopez is currently at 58.5% full, which is 28,898 acre feet. We had no sewer system overflows for the month of July. Year-to-date deliveries from Lopez is at 300 acre feet, and we've pumped under an acre foot of water. Now, on that note, Lopez treatment plant is down until the 21st. So they are just bringing in state water, and that's a paper's number, you know, for delivery. What it did to us, though, we were bringing to 520 gallons per minute. We are down to 230. So we are pumping every day starting this past Monday. So we're going to be trying to stay off peak hours for electrical costs. So we can only pump until noon. And then we're going to be pumping on the weekends because it's completely off peak hours for the entire day. On that note, also, some of the analyzers and pumps, they haven't been used in a while. And we ran into a few little issues here and there. The chlorine pump The hose internally blew apart. You know, they just, we haven't pumped in really almost 2 years for production. So everything took a little ironing out by us, you know, fixing the things, replacing little pieces and O-rings and this and that. Everything's working great. So no concerns whatsoever. We make up the difference with pumping every day, and not worried one bit. That's what the wells are for. As for work orders, we had 9 of those, 14 USAs, 12 customer service calls. We had 4 after-hours call-outs. As you know, previously the hydrant got hit on 20th Court. Paul Place had a call-out because they didn't know their house valve was. We had another call-out on 15th. They didn't know our house valve was. And the third location was also an unknown house valve. Irrigation, 2 irrigation lines, and a line broke behind a washer inside the drywall. It was just kind of odd that we had a lot of call-outs where people just didn't know where the house valves were. And one of them was actually an owner. You know, a lot of people mistaking the gas meters for water. Actually met the gas company out at 11:10 at night. They thought it was a gas line, but that was interesting. We also had a spill on pier. It came from an RV or a trailer. It was sewer. And Sheriff Dispatch got a hold of us, tried the county first, and the county would not respond. They said the CSD was responsible for it. Even though we're not, I had notice of a health issue. So we responded, disinfected, cleaned it up, and then re-disinfected. My concern was the public health. This is something I haven't talked to the general manager about, but it was an incident that occurred after hours. All right, we're continuing to replace meters. First of the month, equipment runs. Lead and copper samples are on hold due to the plant being down. Continuing weed abatement. Sewer cleaning is another big issue. We're trying to get that done as soon as possible with the 15 miles of sewer main we got to take care of. And that pretty much covers everything. Any questions?
Any questions? Isn't Paul Place over on the other side of the creek?
Paul Place, Rio Grande. It's actually in a Rio Grande address.
Behind the 7-Eleven over on Elm Street.
It's off of Elm or the Pike.
Okay, so it's just right there.
Yes.
I knew I'd seen it somewhere.
Yes.
Yeah, but it's we serve it even though
we serve that area water, and we also do the collection.
Okay, thank you
for that part of Rio Grande.
Yeah.
Yes.
Okay. Anything else? Thank you very much, sir. Don't see the fire chief. I don't think there's any major things. General Manager, Mr. Ogren.
Yes, Madam President, members of the board, and following up on Mr. Maricino's comments on the sewage spill on the street as opposed to a product or a release from our wastewater collection system, we'll provide some correspondence to the county to explore the jurisdictional issues because, you know, obviously they have jurisdiction on the streets. But they also have drainage and flood control responsibilities. And so once you have contaminants on the streets, it's sort of presumed that those contaminants will go into the gutters and then into the drainage inlets and find it out to the creeks and the ocean. So I want to make sure that they're aware that even though Tony responded in the situation, that we need to explore really who has the jurisdiction there when the pollution or the spill is not something that's coming out of our collection system.
Right.
Can we bill them?
And the particular cost of this incident, the likelihood of us spending more money than what we might get reimbursed is pretty high. So I think we want to try to clarify with them what the jurisdictional responsibilities and not worry too much about this particular incident.
Okay.
But to have the discussions about, you know, how's this going to be taken care of in the future.
Was it an accidental spill or did they dump their tank?
Correct. It was either an RV or a trailer home that got away from the scene that was identified by the liquor store on Pier.
Is it right by the store there?
Yes, and it was approximately 30 gallons.
Thanks.
Thank you.
And the rest of my items are on the agenda.
Okay, thank you. Don't see anybody from the sheriff's office. Move on to board of directors and outside committee reports. Director Angelo, being your first on the list.
Yep, I don't have anything.
Director Brunet.
Yes, I had attended the Zone 3 meeting on July 20th. And just to go through some of the highlights, they gave an update to regarding the LRP and some gathering of information and data that they're going to take back to the Board of Supervisors that was supposed to be followed up on. So they're gathering that information. There's no date yet when they're going to be presenting it to the Board of Supervisors, but it was really just to inform them of, you know, all of the reasons why, you know, us within our jurisdiction here, Zone 3, desire was to stay within the LRP. Regarding that, too, some information that I thought I'd pass along that I thought was interesting and a little alarming is that, and it may have been shared at the TAC, I'm not sure, but it was in regards to where we're currently at with the Lopez Lake level, that they said if we had the same sort of rainy season as 2015 coming up, that we would be under the 20,000 foot mark by October 2018. So just in a little over a year, if we have a very dry winter, that we'd be right back there. So, I thought it was, number one, I thought it was really confirming that our conservation efforts continuing to remain under the LRP really is the right direction, because we have no idea, you know, at this point in time, what the rainy season's gonna be like for this upcoming year. And they did give an update, which Mr. Ogren has already presented to the board, regarding DWR and the DSOD, the Division of Safety of Dams, regarding Lopez Lake and the spillway, and that's all stemming from the Oroville Dam. They have to turn in a report. It's more of an assessment than anything, and a highly complex questionnaire, I think, that they have to submit to DWR and the DSOD regarding Lopez Lake or Lopez Dam and the spillway. The good thing is, and I think Mr. Ogren will be able to answer a lot of questions, but he's already said a lot regarding him, all of the retrofits and construction that happened early 2000s fixed a whole lot of the issues that some of which was seen up at Oroville. So while this is really just filing a report to DWR, it's not going through a full evaluation yet that they may come back with, but the dam itself and the spillway is evaluated every year, correct me if I'm wrong, I think by the county, to go through and make sure that all the, you know, it's up to par, everything safety wise is everything checked. So I thought it's good in a sense that we may be way ahead of the game, as opposed to potentially a lot of other, you know, dams and communities that have reservoirs and spillways that were built at that time. And the next item was the Santa Maria groundwater modeling. We had to vote on, Zone 3 had budgeted to contribute to the funding for that. And the budgeted amount that they had was $250,000. So the portion, though, that it's coming out to was, I believe it's $117,000. So way under what they had budgeted for. So that was good. That was voted on 5-0. Going to the Board of Supervisors for that recommendation. And, I missed the E-Corps modeling, which is a pretty cool thing. Mr. Ogren's talked about it before, too. It's a software that they're able to use for all the, and it's regarding the contract, potential contract revisions. And they're able to do modeling and looking at where levels have been, and if they were to change the variables, I guess, of any of the contracts, what that would have done to the levels, and that would be a little bit of a predictive model going forward. So overall, I just thought that that's really good good management of resources, looking at something like this in order to see if there would be better ways that we can manage Lopez Lake, and that's everything from agro to our communities too. And I don't know if there's anything you'd want to follow up with that, but that's going forward as well. And I think.
Thank you, Director Brunate. Yeah, the only follow-up comment on the modeling for the potential, it's the contract modifications where the agencies are seeking the right to have some storage capabilities at Lopez. And it's going to be a while still before formal modeling is completed. They're using the model that Director Brunate is referring to, which was developed as part of the habitat conservation plan and what kind of releases might be necessary to meet federal requirements for habitat conservation. Modifying that model, my hope is that we would be able to use it and say, okay, if we stored water at different reservoir levels, then what's the likelihood that we would lose that water in a spill? Because we wouldn't, you know, wouldn't want that to happen. So what would be the ideal time or to be able to store? And maybe that's when the reservoir's between 25,000 and 35,000 acre feet in storage. I don't know, I'm just saying hypothetically. The low reservoir response plan allows us to store when the lake is below 20,000 acre feet in capacity filled. When storage is less than 20,000 acre feet behind the dam, we can start, we have storage rights. But that means that we're already far into a drought. And that might be a little bit late. So maybe it's ideal to start storing when we're at 30,000 or 35,000 acre feet. So I'm hoping that the model that they develop will be a little bit interactive so that we can play with different scenarios just for Oceano and identify if there's ideal conditions for storage.
Thank you.
You're done?
Yes.
Okay. Director Colwell?
I have nothing to report.
Vice President Austin?
Well, I attended the last Sanitation District meeting, and our administrator, Gerhard Hubner, left the job. He retired, and so at the last meeting, we hired temporary administrators, Mr. Paul Karp and Rick Sweet, who have both worked at the plant before, very familiar, and so they're over there now. We hired them for a period of 6 months, and during that time, we'll recruit for a new administrator. And the plant is running very well, and everything's moving along. So that's all I have for that one.
Thank you. And there was a, they call it a MASH gathering, but it was a program at the South County Regional Center conducted by the Homeless Coalition for homeless people today, and they had quite a number, everything from lunch and haircuts to raffling a bicycle to help with SenCal insurance and social services and veteran services and Lions Club glasses available and clothes and shoes, and it was a very, very nice thing. Unfortunately, there were not too many homeless people that attended it, but it was very nice, and I just kind of went over to see, and a lot of people put a lot of work into it, a lot of volunteers over there, maybe kind of, you know, the number of people that are out there trying to help the homeless. So it was a good event. Okay, public comment on special presentations and reports. Seeing no one come forward, we move to item 8, which is a consent agenda items. Do we have any modifications on consent or? Oh, and I'm supposed to ask for public comment again. Nobody's coming forward. Thank you, so we'll just move on to consent. Do we have anything?
Ready to have some?
Yeah,
I'd like to make a motion that we approve the items on the consent agenda, the minutes of July 26th, and the cash disbursements.
I'd second that.
Moved and seconded. All in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Aye. Opposed? Carries 5-0. Moving on to business items. the meat of our meeting tonight. So we'll go to 9A. Or first we'll call for public comment again, but there's still nobody in the audience. So we'll go to 9A, introduction of discussion on developing a water transfer policy in conformity with Measure B12-2012 requiring voter approval for permanent water sales.
Madam President, members of the board, item number 9A has been prompted in part because there are two property owners on Rio Grande Drive outside of the city limits of Rio Grande who have applied for water service from Oceano. They are
Lopez Drive.
Yeah, so they're in the proximity of existing infrastructure from Rio Grande. And as I note in the staff report, there are a number of customers who we currently sell water to through wheeling agreements where the term is wheeling for the water industry, but it's essentially just conveyed through another agency's water system. So these customers who are ours and were approved in prior years get their water conveyed through a Rio Grande system. And based on that, we bill them as a normal customer. There's a bit of a surcharge for not being within our district boundaries. And then they also pay a Rio Grande separately for utilizing the Rio Grande system. Likewise, there's also some customers of our neighboring agencies where we have our infrastructure goes outside of our boundaries and into their boundaries and provides services. And so in the staff report, I identify that there's a few different ways in which these our services are either provided outside of our boundaries through our infrastructure, or our water is provided to individuals who live outside of our boundaries through the infrastructure of another agency. And likewise, some of the residents within Oceano are provided service by neighboring agencies. So I identify it in the staff report because the request is not unusual. It's happened in the past. And what we need to really do in the next, hopefully by the end of the calendar year, is to complete an inventory of the nature of existing relations or existing services and work with primarily the city of Rio Grande on what's going on. With recent development, for example, near 7-Eleven, where an apartment complex was constructed, and they did a rather lengthy line extension in order to connect to Rio Grande's infrastructure. Well, what that means is that some other customers that live in Rio Grande but we serve are a lot more in closer proximity to Rio Grande's infrastructure. And with another couple hundred feet of line extension, they might be able to serve some of the other properties that we currently serve for them. So as time goes by and infrastructure gets developed, there's opportunities, hopefully, to have a Rio Grande servicing their customers in some areas. But set aside the various nature of how out of service service is provided, the two requests that are on the table right now, the most striking feature of them is that I don't see how we can continue with the nature of the services that were approved in the past. And the reason is that in these out-of-service agreements, even though a quantity of water isn't incorporated into the agreements, it still becomes a permanent agreement. And Measure B12 that was adopted in 2012 says that there's going to be no out-of-district sale of water without voter approval. And so to try to do a vote, you know, for one property owner who's going to use a pretty nominal amount of water seems like that would be a pretty far stretch to be able to do. And even though that type of a transaction may not have been what the initiative and the voters had envisioned at the time, because certainly the discussion had been there was on the table of a potential sale of a significant amount of water to a development outside of the city of Pismo Beach. And that prompted the initiative, and the initiative certainly passed by an overwhelming majority of, I think, 84%+. But still, the language of the initiative is still the same: no permanent sale of water outside the district's boundaries. And so sometimes it means that even though a proposal that wasn't envisioned is caught up in the measure. and I certainly believe that to be the case. So I wanted to have an initial discussion with the board because we need to give some feedback to the individuals, and not the type of feedback is a yes or a no, we will do it or we're not going to do it. And we're not specifically talking about their applications today, but it gives, by talking about a water policy and giving staff direction, it gives me the ability to start talking with the applicants and the other agencies about the possible conditions where something might work. So if a permanent sale would require voter approval, and for one or two applicants, that's not really something that's feasible to pursue, then what might the other options be? And so one option would be is something like a 20-year term, where we agree to provide the water for a 20-year term. And then at the end of the 20-year term, we don't have an obligation to provide the water anymore. Now, that might itself make the application infeasible from the property owner's standpoint, depending on what the potential use is. If it's a development project, set aside the two applications that are staff is working on right now, but let's say it's a development project within the boundaries of a city. Maybe that would work, a 20-year term, because the public agencies are working on the regional groundwater sustainability project, and the idea being is that one of the neighboring cities might be very comfortable with promising service to a development, for example, and entering into a 20-year arrangement with Oceano, figuring that before that 20-year term is up, the regional groundwater sustainability project would be implemented, and then they have a permanent source of water for this particular development. When it comes to an application that's outside of the boundaries, like an existing use and the ones that we're talking about right now, maybe a 20-year term would work because the existing uses right now are on well water. And maybe they would only even seek 5 years of getting city water or Oceano water. Maybe they just simply want to reduce the stress on their wells. So those might also be agreeable. If again they have an existing source well water, there's other implications because one of the properties, for example, is directly on the border of Arroyo Grande, and right next to them is a subdivision. And so, would obtaining a municipal supply be the first step in that property being able to then subsequently pursue a subdivision map? Those types of implications, the land use implications, are really then the jurisdiction of Arroyo Grande, the county, since they're in the unincorporated area, and LAFCO, the Local Agency Formation Commission, and really coming down to LAFCO, because LAFCO has to approve annexations if that was ever to be pursued by this property owner, and LAFCO also has to approve any out-of-service agreements. What's a sort of, again, a side interesting note then on annexations, if the property owner thought that getting water might be dependent on annexing to Arroyo Grande, well, my understanding is once you pursue an annexation, you have to then also evaluate for CEQA what the potential implications of a subdivision are, because annexing to a city where your neighbor is zoned and has already subdivided would give you some potential ability to seek a subdivision after the annexation. And it's the soonest of the discretionary actions by the governing body, the soonest of either proposing a subdivision or proposing an annexation, that the land use implications have to be addressed. And that itself would be pretty costly for the applicant. But that land use is really not the jurisdiction of Oceano. It's simply the question of does Oceano have water, and under what conditions might water might be provided. So in order to kickstart some of the details of such policy discussions, I created an exhibit, or a draft water transfer policies for discussion only tonight. And on the first point, I have a little typo, whether a request is either for a permanent or a non-permanent supply, the applicant, these things can take a lot of time. and they can take a lot of administrative time working with the other agencies. And so really to proceed, the applicant would have to, the proposal is that the applicant would have to execute a cost reimbursement agreement and make sure to cover all of our costs, including, you know, cost of legal counsel, because again, we're working with a measure like B12, we're working with other agencies, legal agreements would most likely be required. So make it really clear for everybody up front that this is 100% cost reimbursement issue. In the second item, the permanent transfer shall follow the procedural requirements established with the approval of Measure B12. So Measure B12 has noticing requirements associated with it that directly lead then to the question of putting something in front of a voter. So if there was truly a permanent transfer requested, then this policy would just refer back to Measure B12. Pretty straightforward on that one. It's really item number three on the non-permanent transfers. What I attempted to do here is to create some sort of a consistency with Measure B12, because Measure B12 provides a noticing requirement prior to going out and seeking voter approval. And so then it seems to me then we would want to have some sort of a public hearing on a non-permanent transfer and also do noticing. Now on 3A, it talks about, it speaks to that details of the proposed sale, including impacts, shall be presented in a report prepared by a registered professional engineer and a certified public accountant. And that's the language that comes out of Measure B12 on a permanent sale. Now, the idea of having a registered professional engineer address the water supply impacts makes sense. In terms of having a certified public accountant involved, I even questioned the language of Measure B12, because certified public accountants usually don't sign off on things like the fiscal implications associated with the water transfer. Right? They do audits. Now, they can do something that's called an agreed-upon procedure, and that's when you work with the CPA and say, hey, we want you to evaluate certain specific facts or certain specific, you know, accounting numbers that... But it's still sort of unusual that that's in B12. The idea of having a fiscal impact analysis addressed makes sense, but to specifically call out a certified public accountant, certainly somebody who's got an economics, a PhD in economics can do economic analysis as well. But I picked up the language out of B12 in order to emphasize it a little bit. And what, as for discussion purposes, in coming back to your board, I would almost take 3A and modify the language to say, in all details of any proposed sale, including impact, shall be presented in a report addressing the long-term water supply impacts and the fiscal impacts of the proposal. Then in 3B, the idea of having a public hearing, proposed sale, have at least 60 days, that's all, again, consistent with B12. I have a blank in there, which is the district publishes a notice of the public hearing in a newspaper of general circulation in accordance with government section. And then I left that blank simply because there's a number of different government code sections out there that prescribe, for example, publish it twice within 14 days of each other, no more than 30 days before the date of the hearing. You know, there's several different code sections that provide guidance on the timing of notices. And for the preparation of this staff report, I didn't jump into which of those I thought would be most appropriate. That's something that in the near future, I'd work with legal counsel to see what do we think is the best code section. But rather than spelling out our own language on the notification, referring it back to a government code section is usually a pretty easy thing to do. In terms of the requirement of CEQA, making sure that that's being addressed, and of course making sure that the applicant is responsible for addressing CEQA, and then obtaining approvals from others would also be the applicant's responsibility. In terms of four, that's really where I get into what I think the engineer's evaluation should be, and that's what's the current water sources of the districts and what's the amount of water available from each supply, and then talk about some of the data that we would be expected in there. In the final report on number five, with regard to the fiscal evaluation, I say a certified public accountant shall, at a minimum, provide the district's estimated cost of making water available to the applicant, whether the applicant uses the water or not. And here in the fiscal implications, and again, whether this is done by a CPA or it's just defines what needs to be in a fiscal evaluation, is that I'm not sure that our existing agreements for out-of-service are as well-crafted as they should have been. And so we make this obligation to others, and we only charge them for the water that they're actually using. And yet our residents within the community in our billing structure are paying for everything, the water that we're using and the water that we're not using. And so if, for example, we were to structure something and it got approved by Arroyo Grande and it got approved by LAFCO for somebody who's outside one of these new applicants, the question in my mind really would be, what kind of a commitment are we making? Rather than just saying, hey, we're going to sell you water for 20 years, we should say we'll sell you up to one half of an acre foot of water for the next 20 years, or we'll sell you 1 acre foot of water up to one. Now, whether you use that whole half an acre foot or not, or whether you use that whole acre foot of water or not, you're paying for the whole acre foot. We know that in our community we have a supply that's in excess of what the demand is, and so I would want to make sure that these out-of-district applicants are really paying for the full cost of a commitment, whether it's a half an acre foot or an acre foot, and then they have a quota to live with in as well, and if they use extra water, then I would expect some sort of additional surcharges on top. 5B is the current value of historic costs to secure the water that's been available. And what I'm envisioning there is that we do a fiscal analysis that says we've been paying for a lot of water for State Water and Lopez Water for many, many years, and that's what makes this water available for somebody new. And if district customers have sunk in $10,000 to secure in half an acre foot of water for the last 20 years. And now this new applicant that's outside of our boundaries is going to seek that half an acre foot or that acre foot of water, then there should be a fairly significant upfront charge in order to help recoup the past costs that the district customers have paid for the security of the water supply that they've established. And to me, that upfront lump sum payment, 5B, is really the incentive for the district to provide service to people outside of our boundaries. Because when we add one or two or three or five water customers from, outside of our boundaries, the fiscal benefits of it are pretty nominal and insignificant, especially in comparison to all the money over time that district customers have paid in order for that reliable supply. So 5B would seek some sort of an upfront payment for the right to get our water over a 20-year period. And then during that 20-year period, it's pretty much a cost recovery. That should also work well within strategies of our neighboring agencies, because if, for example, it was a development project and all of the evaluations said that, well, they need 5 acre feet of water, they needed a available supply of 5 acre feet. Well, there's provisions in the government code where the city of Arroyo Grande can make sure that they recoup 100% of all that cost from that one development. That's the availability charges. And then on top of that, whatever they use, then the city of Arroyo Grande can charge them as a regular customer. And so I've intentionally structured some of this language of whether the applicant uses the water or not, because then that ties into government code sections on standby charges and availability charges, and would help all the agencies involved make sure that if this was for new development, then everybody's getting their money recouped from that new development, and that existing customers, whether they're Oceano or Rio Grande customers, are not footing the bill for new development. And then item six is this issue of 6A on historical costs. One of the challenges there is that if we did calculations and let's say the number of the historical costs was so high that it made it infeasible for somebody to buy that supply, well, 6A says that it's still within your board's discretion. Because if the calculation were $25,000 up front for a half an acre foot of water and that was just infeasible, but your board was fine with recouping $15,000 for that half acre foot, and the applicant had the ability to pay that, then it would still be within your board's discretion to approve something less than the historical cost. This concept itself is actually structured into the Nacimiento agreements, where all the agencies that executed a Nacimiento contract with the County of San Luis Obispo recognized that the Nacimiento project itself would have an excess supply for many years, as it does. And so if there was a third party who wanted to come in and buy some of that on a temporary basis, then this historical cost analysis has to be done, but there's flexibility in the decision making to essentially negotiate. And then we also put in other considerations as well. But I think that overall, this overall direction that being able to respond to applicants that, you know, look, we can't sell you a permanent supply unless there's voter approval. And we don't really want to seek voter approval on nominal types of requests. Instead, what makes sense is 20-year deals or a term that would be negotiable, but there has to be something up front in order to, for consideration of the district and the historical costs paid by district customers. And then in terms of ongoing costs, it has to be 100% reimbursed based on a specific quota that's established, whether it's a half an acre foot or an acre foot or 5 acre feet of water. And then again, on the land use consideration, certainly it would be within your board's discretion to want to understand what that water might be used for. Whether that actually affects your determination or not would be, you know, for your board to decide at some point in time in the future, even though the formal land use determinations would be done by other agencies. And I would be glad to discuss further, answer questions. And
okay. What the two projects now that they're talking about, is it single family residences?
The two that are just outside of Rio Grande's, I know both of them are large parcels.
Right, okay.
And
subdividable, like they could be.
Yeah, and I believe one has a residence. I think they might both have residence, whether they have one home or two homes, but the existing land use in terms of residential structures is relatively limited. So whether it's one or two with, you know, you can have large parcels that
there is a subdivision next door. Is that in the city limits?
Yes. And so that one, that property borders the city, and yeah, right up to city limits, there's a regular single family subdivision right there.
But they can't get water because they're not in the city limits. So they
right.
would have, so they're in the Rio Grande rural county.
Yeah.
Has.
And Rio Grande currently has pipelines that go outside of their boundaries. So of course the individuals recognize that there's a pipe right in front of their right in front of their property, and so their question is, why can't we just hook up to that pipe? And the answer is, well, there's a lot of decision making.
So does it look like they're looking to, like in the future, they want to secure water so they will have it if they do make a subdivision? Is that
so,
what it looks like?
You know, it's always hard to tell, right? Mm-hmm. Because when individuals come and apply, they apply in order to get water for what they've got going on right
but
now.
But they haven't said what.
Right. The fact that we know one, and the one has been developing property within Oceano and generally is in the business of developing property.
May I?
Yeah.
Well, we don't really have their applications on,
okay,
on the agenda today.
So, but then I get concerned in temporary, like, can you stop it then once you turned it on? That came up before when we were talking about the permanent sale, and once you say, okay, we'll give it to you. So 20 years they built all these homes, and you're going to say, okay, now you have to get water somewhere else. And can we do that? I don't.
So there are some code sections that the land use planners would have to address. I think in terms of a subdivision, LAFCO and the city would clearly, if their belief is that this property owner wants to develop, then the likelihood of them requiring annexation would be a lot higher. So in some situations when a public agency goes to do a larger subdivision, they have to make findings that there's at least 20 years of a water supply available. And so this type of an arrangement would allow them to make those findings. Now, if that subdivision, for example, was annexed into the city of Rio Grande, and they made the findings that there's a 20-year supply of water, and then 20 years goes by and the regional groundwater sustainability project doesn't get implemented, well, then it's really the public agency that's taking that risk, because they're going to have to continue to provide water to that public agency. It would not be in a risk on Oceano, though. Essentially, we would get our water supply back. After 20 years, they might come with hat in hand maybe and say, can we get it for another 20 years, in which case the governing board at that point in time might be looking for some significant consideration. The risk ultimately on the subdivisions falls back to the public agency to be able to provide the water supply. And when droughts come forward, especially considering the one that we just recently saw, if new sources like the Regional Groundwater Sustainability Project aren't implemented, then that means that the conservation efforts even get harder next time around. But it would not be a risk on Oceano.
So I'm just saying, if you were to say we would sell you so many acre feet, and then what if they needed more? I mean,
yeah, after 20 years, the public agency that's selling the water is the one that would bear the risk. Again, at that 20-year time period, the risk's not on Oceano. The governing board of Oceano at that time, if Oceano still had adequate water, could consider extending it for another period of time.
Well, I know after what we went through with the drought, and you know, Oceano was all the one that was all very secure with their water. Mm-hmm. And so I'd be, you know, I like what you've done here. It pretty much covers, you know, Texas, but I'm still very leery about
And so then that's where on item four, the engineer would have to be able to, has to be able to show what are the current, before anything got approved, what are the district's current water sources and the amount of water available from each supply.
And on all these policies, with the report and everything, the applicant would pay 100% of the cost for all the reports?
Yes.
Before they know if they can get water or not,
yes.
Right?
Okay. Yes. So, for example, if it was today and somebody was asking for 5 acre feet of water for the next 20 years, I think based on what we've been discussing for, you know, last 3 years, doing a 20-year lease for 5 acre feet of water is not going to be a difficult decision. Mm-hmm. Oceano has more than adequate supply for something that's relatively nominal. If something came in that was proposing 100 acre feet of water for the next 20 years, that's an entirely different question. So to get a report prepared for 5 acre feet of water, I think the applicant would have to recognize they have a cost, but the risks there probably aren't that high. If they're asking for 100 acre feet of water, the cost of the report is going to be much more expensive, and maybe they don't get anything approved at the end of the day, but that's the risk that the applicant or the developer would have to take.
I hate to see where we say, okay, we will sell you this amount of water, then it turns out they want more and get us in a position where we would be in a lawsuit trying to fight.
That's where, you know, having good legal counsel to make sure that it states things, quantities not to exceed and that type of
language.
And
they can't come back and say, well, now we're going to build 6 more homes than we thought, so we're going to need more water, so can we get more water? And we say no, then they just don't build the other.
But, you know, the idea is if we make a commitment that we'll provide you up to 5 acre feet or up to 20 acre feet of water for the next 20 years, then the district would be committed to making sure that that water is available. And we would have to address that in the engineer's evaluation of what happens if we're getting cut back on state water or Lopez water or groundwater.
What happens if we go through 3 years of drought? Then,
yeah.
And then, but that will all be studied beforehand and what would happen.
That's correct.
What is similarly, and I don't quite understand, assume that Oceano provides, say, 10 acre feet for 20 years. At the end of those 20 years, did you indicate some other public agency would then bear the responsibility of providing water to that subdivision?
Yes, because under this proposal, the idea is we're not going to sell the water directly to the applicant.
Okay.
We're going to lease the water to the other agency.
All right. Okay.
Right. And then the other agency has to develop the agreement with the applicant. And that way, once the 20 years is over, then our deal with the other agency is over and they have a remaining responsibility to the applicant.
That clarifies it for me.
And to me, that's critical because that's the only way that we can structure something and not come into violation with B12.
Good.
The only question I had was in regard, and geographically, I'm not sure, like the applicants, are we talking about residents or, you know, lands that are close to Oceano jurisdiction, or?
No, these ones are up Arroyo Grande Drive, so if you go through Old Town Arroyo Grande and start heading up to Lopez and travel past a bunch of subdivisions.
Okay.
Yeah, right when you get to that sign that says that you're leaving Arroyo Grande. I don't know that they actually have a leaving Arroyo Grande,
Struther,
but if you looked around the other way.
Or around the Struther
okay.
Park here.
Past Struther Park.
Just that's where we've been.
Yeah.
Oh, okay.
So right on the fringe of Arroyo Grande. And this is not unusual. You know, there's projects that are fringe of San Luis Obispo that the city of San Luis and the county and LAFCO have to, you know, talk about and figure out what they're going to do. And LAFCO's general direction, though, is to get these lands to annex into the city's boundaries because they want to avoid that urban sprawl.
Right.
Yeah.
So is the issue that these applicants are not able to go because they're not within the city limits of Arroyo Grande?
That's correct.
So Arroyo Grande has no obligation to provide water.
And because that's correct, and Arroyo Grande right now is not in as good of a water situation as Oceano, so Arroyo Grande is not willing to take any of their supplies and make it available to applicants outside of their boundaries. They don't have the ability to do so.
So can I ask what prompts them to come straight to Oceano, or do they just go to all
water?
Yeah,
I know that much.
Because
but
the general knowledge exists that these types of arrangements have been made in the past.
Okay.
In fact, we have one where it was previously approved for a 5-unit subdivision outside of Arroyo Grande. And I think 4 of the homes have been built. One has come in and is about to build. And, you know, we have to provide service to that one because we've promised to provide service to all 6.
Hmm.
Again, prior to Measure B12. So there's the general knowledge that these type of arrangements have been made in the past. And I think that by considering these policies and starting the feedback to the applicants, is essentially, well, we can't do business as we did it in the past because Measure B12 has been adopted, and there's numerous things that we need to consider now, and it may be very expensive as well.
Yeah.
What you drew up was great.
What about, we also have a commitment to that development just across the street from Halcyon with the...
Next to the trailer park.
There's 7 houses and the storage facilities. And
oh,
we have,
yes.
We'll serve, they're
right
just outside.
Across from the house. Okay, and that one actually is in our boundaries now.
That's right.
Yeah, it's just we don't have infrastructure that goes there, so we've conditioned that on them extending the lines. That kind of creates a lot of expense for a single subdivision, a small subdivision like they're talking about. But I know that they've renewed their interest in doing that. With that potential line extension, we might be able to then provide service to other properties within our boundaries that Arroyo Grande is currently serving.
I have a question, and I don't want anybody to interpret this because I'm not in favor, but what about the potential to rewrite and redo through election measure B12, because there is some ambiguities about it anyway. And there's an election next year.
So that's certainly a thought that I had not considered in drafting this up, but it is clearly within your board's discretion, and it's not unusual. That is where an initiative passes, and then a governing board will come back and want to take that very broad initiative and then start identifying details. Now, certainly it's within your discretion to adopt these details as policies, because they all conform to Measure B12.
Okay, yeah.
But there's nothing that would preclude you from saying, look, voters, you gave us feedback on B12. Now we want you to consider the following items and to put that forward as an election item. That is certainly within your board's discretion.
It would make it easier to sell water on a temporary basis.
Well, you could even go through there and say something, maybe even, I mean, it just, purpose of this discussion is to, of this agenda yeah. item is to have discussions just exactly like this.
Yeah.
You can say, look, in Measure B12, you adopted this, but we want to exclude any de minimis applications of less than 5 acre feet, provided that the cumulative total of all of them don't exceed 50 acre feet.
Yeah.
And by putting that, that is is essentially seeking voter approval of a program, a very limited program, and that could be put on the ballot, and the voters could, you know, vote on that, and that would be compliant with B12 as well.
Yeah, I don't know whether I don't know whether I would support that, but
A proposal like that, in my mind,
you have to go get the petitions again.
No, it's within your governing board's discretion to do it directly. So petitions on initiatives,
just public hearing.
Yeah, what the petitions do is, and not all states allow it to happen. California is a state that's considered to be petition happy, I guess, or something. We do it much more frequently than most states do. So a petition is when the voters basically say, "Hey, we want to have this question in front of us," and City of San Luis Obispo is doing a special election this month on a question. But it's always within your board's discretion to seek vote approval on something.
I just wonder if it would be cleaner to change the measure than it would be to develop a rather complicated policy. I don't know.
The other thing that's nice with the measure is that it can memorialize it for, and everything, nothing's ever for all time, but essentially a policy adopted by your board could be modified by a subsequent board. You know, something that the voters approve cannot be modified by policy of a subsequent board unless the, you know, ballot item structured that way. But generally speaking, if something is approved by the voters, if you want to change it, you got to go back to the voters. So in bringing this item back, we can certainly take that into consideration as well.
Approximately what would be the cost of an amendment to B12?
I'm thinking that it would be consistent with what the cost was for your board's election, the general election that was held. And I'm not sure, Carrie, if you remember what we paid the county clerk for the election, but we could come back on that item too. For some reason, $5,000 rings a bell to me.
Relatively modest.
As long as it's part of the general election.
Yeah.
Well, there's a general election next year.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And the county clerk provides timelines on when all the action needs to be taken.
I just throw it out there. I don't know that I'm in favor of it. changing this, it's.
Well, I think as a question, maybe more as an observation to follow up, though, is, you know, very specifically, it's permanent sale. So, you know, I thought, you know, as we were talking about here, well, you know, a 20-year sale or something like that. So it almost seems like, wouldn't we want a little bit more stringent, strict, you know, as far as within the measure itself or you know, proposal for that it would be a little bit more, because it's just permanent. Well, you could make it for 99 years and it's not permanent. So, you know, it's kind of one of those things that.
Yeah, so.
That's just a thought.
Yes. and understanding that there was a certain amount of sentiment in Measure B12 that resulted from a specific proposal. Mm-hmm. When that happens, measures aren't always precise for looking at a broader vision. And so the ability to develop something and put it back in front of the voters might have more meaning. Just even the idea that the Measure B12 cited a certified public accountant, and I kind of scratched my head and I'm like, why one of those persons? As opposed to saying a fiscal impact analysis will need to address A, B, and C. So I think there's plenty of opportunity to put something in front of the voters that would be better structured than Measure B12.
Yeah, well, there was some, as I remember, I don't remember all the details, but there was some questions, there was some interpretation challenges.
Okay, so again, no action on this. And I've gotten some of the feedback, and even just based on this basic discussion, I can start giving feedback to both the cities, LAFCO, and the applicants.
The last thing I wanted to say, too, was just a huge in favor, too, at least personally, is regarding, building in as far as the infrastructure costs of the past.
Yeah.
And how, I don't know if the contracts in the past were more just the water cell itself, in discussions that we've, state water to, zone 3 and everything, it's like there's been so much put into this that everybody needs to share that burden, especially in something like this, too.
Yeah, that's certainly a tenet of my thinking and the idea that, people who live within Oceano, even if they haven't developed their property yet, are still paying property taxes, and some of that property tax still comes back to the district.
Right.
But if they're not within the district's boundaries, they haven't been contributing to our tax base at all.
I pay for Lopez.
Yeah.
And I've got a water well. Indirectly Lopez helps me, but not directly.
Yep.
So I'm happily paying my property tax. Anyway, thank you. I think this is something we are going to, because we have enough water so we can.
Now we have enough water.
Well, but the thing is, I think we have enough even with a little bit more out the door. But yeah, and the other thing, we do need to look at our whole infill. You mentioned it here, but I think even again, looking at infill going up some too.
To get the water there, are there pipes there already that you just turn our?
Oh yeah.
Yes.
Yeah. It's not. But I was thinking of Oceano's growth. Make sure we really know what Oceano's demand is going to be 20 years from now before we sell it to Roy Grandy.
Yes, so the 2009 Master Water Plan did provide some projections on that. At some time in the not too distant future, it would be good to update that analysis.
Because I think I think we need to look at more density in housing, not less, as the future goes forward.
And I agree that even if certain planning models have certain projections in them, that we know with population trends and the crunch on housing, it would be safe to have additional reserves for changes in zoning down the future. On that point, the City of San Luis Obispo, in its water supply policies, does a very good job of setting aside reserves for contingencies and unforeseen, and be wise for Oceano to take some cautious approach on those estimates as well.
Yes, thank you. Anything else?
No.
Okay, let's move on to business item 9B, consideration of a recommendation to select a proposal on preparing a utility yard site plan with a budget adjustment in the amount of $25,000.
And Madam President and members of the board, we received two proposals. We solicited three in accordance with your purchasing policies, obtained two. One was from RRM and the other is Fraser Cypro Architects. I reviewed the proposals with Directors Brunet and Angelo, and I think the three of us were sort of a consensus that they were pretty consistent with each other. And almost to be expected on something that's a relatively small dollar site planning study. Now, these are informal proposals, as opposed to if we got into larger dollar proposals informal, then I'd identify selection criteria up front. But these are letter proposals, and the consultants came out, they met with us, they met with staff. Tony did site yard visits with them. We talked about our overall goals and objectives, and then they sent us the letter proposals. And they, again, two reputable firms, pretty close. And at least in my mind, the tiebreaker was that RRM knowingly does more housing designs, more subdivision and neighborhood types of designs. And that was the sort of the minor tiebreaker, because the utility yard on 19th Street is right there in the middle of a neighborhood, and it, you know, from the blunt opinion standpoint, looks terrible. You know, if I owned a house on that street or across the street from the water yard, I'd wish that it had a different appeal to it. So that is one of the objectives that we discussed with your board about this site planning. Not only and we showed some pictures of some of the existing structures that are being held up by the termites, I think more so than anything else. Our major warehouse our airplane hangar that we used to, you know, park the backhoes and whatnot in there and have some other supplies and our equipment. That recently got re-roofed, and it's also, did the termiting is done or scheduled? Okay, and so our termiting got done. So, and the termite people also agreed that there was no use in termiting the other buildings because they were...
They didn't want surprises.
I think the termites are winning. Yeah.
Would fall down without the termites holding hands.
Yeah. We forewent that cost. But they are in bad shape. Those things need to be addressed. So we were identifying that. We were identifying the need to coordinate with the neighboring property owner who wants to get access through what we own on 19th Street. We've identified the need to maybe enhance the drainage, do landscaping. Maybe we can do something for the neighborhood parking situation. We have that whole stretch of property that extends from the water yard to Wilmar. So all of those are well understood in the proposals as part of making that a better site, both in terms of Tony's needs and the needs of our operations, as well as working better with the neighborhood and having a better facility there. So two well-qualified firms, they both understood the budget, they both understand the scope of work, and at least my thought was we gave RRM the edge because they've got more experience on sort of those neighborhood appeal types of issues. And if approved by your board, then this is the type of purchase order that would require approval by the president. And so similar to other ones that we've done in the recent past, like re-roofing this building, we would work with the board president in getting final approval. RRM provided their set of terms and conditions, which were included, but we would strip those off and attach the normal terms and conditions that we approved with purchase orders. If they wanted to edit those at all, then legal counsel would be involved in helping to make sure that they stay in conformance with existing district policies. But again, that would be authorization would be essentially provided to the board president to approve any final changes that might be appropriate.
I did just want to add to one of the other things on the RRM proposal that we liked was the on page 7 of 17 or 46 of 60, task A for the schematic design. It has the developed conceptual drainage plans, and having that fully spelled out and everything, and that's, you know, one of the undertakings that we're trying to do in Oceano. I thought that was a big plus for the RRM. But both proposals had advantages, and that the other one maybe not so much. But overall, the RRM we thought was looked good.
Okay.
Need to entertain a motion? Or do we need a motion?
I'll go ahead and make a motion that we, as a recommendation, to select the RRM Design Group and direct the president to execute a purchase order, preparing a utility yard site plan with budget adjustment in the amount of $25,000 with staff recommendations of budget adjustments.
I'll second.
Been moved and seconded. All in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? Carries 5-0. Right. That is the funniest. That utility yard is the funniest situation. I guess it's like a lot of situations in Oceano, though. Houses down alleys and.
It is an interesting layout, and I haven't researched the details of it. It just seems kind of obvious that what happened in the late 1960s, as Lopez was getting developed, is they brought in the major pipeline from Lopez right down 19th Street, and our vault is in what would have been, you know, normally would be in the street, but instead the county abandoned portion of the street. The district took ownership of that portion of the street, and it was a very cost-effective approach at the time, I'm sure.
Probably wasn't any houses there, just be careful.
And I don't think there was houses around.
There weren't houses there.
Is that right?
Yeah, no, yeah. It was just the old house.
Just the one.
Just
there's two buildings or something on one side.
Phil's old house.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So in a way, when people built houses with a water yard appearing as it was, then they knew what they were getting themselves into.
They knew they were building next to the water yard.
Yeah.
It's their view.
The property was cheap.
Well, and it'll be interesting to see how the site analysis comes, because sometimes the things that you would really like to do end up having a high price tag associated with them. And so the idea is they're going to come up with three basic approaches up front, and then probably delve into the details on what might be more feasible. But certainly we'll be back to your board during the whole process.
Is the site fenced?
Yes. Yeah, so one of the ideas is moving the fence back, moving the structures back, and not have that fence protrude all the way out into the street like it currently is.
Can we move it into the, or out into the?
Pardon me?
This fence, move it out more, or?
Push it back from the street.
Okay.
Yeah.
Oh, there it is, yeah.
So.
Okay. Tempest Fugis. 9C, discussion of transition planning for the district's general manager.
Madam President, members of the board, this agenda item is also an introduction agenda item, and part of making sure just to have public discussions about some transition planning. And in the staff report, I identify a number of traits that I think would be ideal for the district's next general manager. As we know, one of the big tasks we're working on now and through the next year is going to be our capital improvement program. So like many community services districts who employ general managers who have project management and often are engineers, but not always engineers, that also seems to be a primary trait that will be important for Oceano's next general manager. So it's certainly a theme that I've emphasized in here. I talk in the staff report about approximately $375,000 in grants that we've been awarded to help with our infrastructure planning. Often engineers can be project management oriented, or they can be design engineers. And the idea is that design engineers probably not going to be the best traits. Project managers, program managers tend to have some general management experience in working with the public, doing public presentations. And if it's an engineer, then as we have development projects come forward, they can do the sign-offs that our consulting engineer does right now. And previously we reported to your board that we roughly paid $20,000 last year on our consulting engineer for development review. That's a cost we pay, but applicants end up reimbursing us for all those costs. If the general manager is an engineer and can sign off on that, then it's recovering a portion of that individual salary as opposed to paying for a consulting engineer. The overall schedule, the thought is that coming back with a job description, this is August, and sort of targeting a job description around the October timeframe, and then working through that with your board in the holiday season so that we could consider a formal opening up of the advertising around the holiday season. And I would, those are my comments and my staff report, and be glad to open it up for overall discussions.
Sure, you don't want to stay for 20 more years?
Sure.
Sure. Do we need to put together a budget for this in any way, shape, or form? Or just let it go along?
A budget in terms of the recruitment effort, or a budget in terms of
recruitment effort? I'm looking at brochures and maybe some advertising and stuff.
Let's do this. When we do the first quarter budget report, which will come forward to your board in the October timeframe, probably the second meeting in October, we can look at what we think are cost estimates associated with doing the brochures and the recruitment at that time.
And then at some point we're going to have to, I don't know how we go about exactly, specifically, putting some kind of a salary on the table for this person.
So I had anticipated doing a survey of the other community services districts within the county in order to provide your board with a
range.
Yeah, a matrix of what other districts pay in the county.
Okay.
My general sense is that type of salary survey will give a good range for your board to consider. I kind of have numbers in my own head right now, but I just sort of hesitate on
sounds.
We've talked about this before too. We want the greater community to understand that Oceano is making strides toward becoming more professional, more proficient. And it sort of ties into a thought that's been evolving in my own mind concerning the cleanup week coming in September. I wonder if we could even get some news reporting on Oceano is making a great effort to pay for and encouraging its citizens to clean up. And it sort of ties in to the overall reputation of Oceano.
I think additionally, too, I would say, the reputation and then the leadership, that is here, whether voluntarily or from an administration standpoint, in the results section down here, developing a transition plan to help promote a well-managed and well-governed community. We've said that a few different times at the last number of board meetings, I think with different policies and steps and programs that have been instituted, are continuing to be really built out. And going back in April is when we attended the the board leadership training. I thought that's one thing that I think we all are unified in is really doing all of our best efforts. And I think in this too, something like an overlap that was discussed in here, to be able to really transition the role to another, GM of choice, I think with consistency and everything to be able to continue moving forward, I think is a great plan of action. It's another testament to everyone here wanting to continue that well-managed and well-governed community, so agreed.
And taking the two comments sort of together, we can certainly start drafting up some press releases and just at a staff level, I can work with the board president on on press releases, whether it's the September cleanup event or at the appropriate time, making announcements of the district's future efforts in terms of recruitment. The other thought with regard to Director Brunet's comments is that sort of emphasizing why the district hired me originally and where it was a recovery. And so, you know, my skills and experience and traits were well suited for helping, you know, bring the district out of a deficit and some of the challenges that it was having right now. And providing an emphasis to the public that, you know, it's really your board's responsibility to make sure that as things are getting accomplished, we still need to look forward then, and the best traits for a general manager can change over time. And on the overlap question, it's sometimes difficult to know when you're going to get that right candidate. And of course, I'm flexible on my timing so that there's not a, you know, artificial deadline to have somebody new identified, because when we create the artificial deadlines, the challenge is that you end up sort of having to select that best person that you hope might do the job. And what we really want to do is make sure we have the highest confidence that the individual selected is going to be well suited to succeed. And we don't want to have that artificial time crunch.
Sounds great.
Yeah.
Okay, anything else? We've gone to 9D, consideration of a recommendation to authorize the board president to approve a purchase order to replace a damaged fire hydrant and repair related damage on 20th Court.
Madam President, members of the board, so on item 9D, this one's a little bit different than all the other fire hydrants that we've had damaged in the last. There's been a spate of fire hydrants. I don't know. Maybe we're painting them with a really attractive color or something like that.
They're not tall enough. They're not tall enough because when you look through your side mirrors, you can't see them.
But they're tall enough to connect to the truck.
I wasn't speaking to a particular incident, Director Angelo. But normally, you know, they're designed to break off, and then you can go and fix them and everything. This particular incident on 20th Court undermined the sidewalk, and so there's a significant amount of erosion. We notified the county the following day so that they had constructive notice of a risk associated with the sidewalk. And we've done some email exchanges with them. They've clearly want us to take a lead on the repairs. They haven't been explicit, but I think that they consider the risk and the damage to the sidewalks, or the undermining of the sidewalks, to be a result of the fire hydrant. And so they're looking to us to make all repairs, not an unreasonable demand on their standpoint. And we've already notified the insurance company, even though we don't have a dollar amount yet. We've submitted a claim with just to put the insurance company on notice, an unspecified dollar amount of damages. So your board approval is required on this because the estimated cost of repairs is going to exceed my purchasing authority of $7,500. I cite the government code section, public contract code section 22032A, because that's the specific code section that allows the district to negotiate with a contractor if the total project costs are under $45,000. It's expected to be well underneath $45,000, roughly speaking. I think we were talking about around $10,000. They're going to have to, you know, take up a portion of the sidewalk, go in there, recompact, put our pipes down, and then pour new contract. The county will have to be involved, associated with inspection on compaction or some level there, and I'll have some follow-up to do with the county to make sure we know exactly what their involvement is going to be. All the costs, though, should be reimbursed by insurance, and we haven't had any insurance companies challenging, you know, prior fire hydrant damages. Would not expect them to challenge it in this case either, and we're standing prepared to be able to move forward relatively quickly. I've already contacted a couple of contractors, And really, that's going to come down to who can perform the work more quickly. We would not expect much of a cost difference.
Are the only pipes laid bare the ones serving the fire hydrant? Or was there other, like sewer pipes or anything left? Other pipes?
Yeah, question, laterals or sewer pipes or anything else exposed?
Yes, it did expose two individual homes, laterals for water. It exposed some power. It broke a irrigation line also.
Irrigation line to?
To one of the residents.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, because the hydrant sits dead center between two homes. And actually the infrastructure, the berry, it's basically an L shape. You go from the ductile iron to the hydrant. That's called a berry. That actually broke.
Ooh, yeah.
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 So with respect to the irrigation system of the private homeowner, any damages associated with that and repairs associated with that will still be the homeowner's obligations. And I would anticipate they would need to file a claim. There's always a chance that people end up doing cross complaints against each other. But on something that's such a small dollar volume, I wouldn't expect that. I would expect everybody just to, you know, file with the insurance company and seek recovery of their own damages. The idea that the electric and the other utilities might have some exposure there, we'll have to make sure to coordinate with them as well. Or make sure that the county inspections has adequately addressed the other utilities that are in the county right away.
Yeah, and look for the gas lines.
Yeah, I think it's been US 8 already.
Okay. So, yeah, thank you. Yeah. Do I have a motion?
Well, I would move that we authorize our president, Ms. White, to negotiate and approve the purchase order for the repair of the hydrant as well as the related damages.
Seconded.
Been moved and seconded. All in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? Carries 5-0. I don't see that we have any hearing items. Do we have any written or late received written communications?
I did receive an interesting article from Vice President Austin on the creation of the Oceano Water Company on April 29th, 1922.
Yeah, somebody sent that to me, so I thought it'd be interesting.
Yeah, so it seems like prior to April 29th, 1922, there was a little 2-horsepower pump and a well and something that was serving about 5 properties along Pier Avenue. And then somebody wanted to expand it. They had bought a bunch of the land and they went to a commission, which I assume was
the Railroad Commission.
Yeah, the Railroad Commission.
They handled that stuff at the time.
And guessing that the Railroad Commission probably handled a number of public utility items, because on that first page there was some reference to some other proceeding. My guess is that the Railroad Commission was first because they were the dominant entity, and that over time that commission had new powers and maybe they even became the Public Utilities Commission, who knows. But yeah, it seems to be the evidence that the first water company in Oceano, which then predated Oceano CSD, was the Oceano Water Company of 1922, April 29th, 1922.
Wow. So, birthday.
Yes, I think we'll have a centennial coming up in a few years.
Okay, and Linda, do you want to make an announcement?
Yes.
We're going off agenda just slightly, but
I want to make an announcement for the community, is that if you're not aware that in June of this year, we were notified by the Department of Defense that one of our missing Marines from World War II's body had been recovered. He was killed in the Battle of Tarawa in 1943. So there's been, since like 2010, they've been working on recovering and bringing back the remaining men that were left there after the war. And so George B. Murray, who lived in Oceano, was 20 years old, and he was killed the first day of the battle. It was a three-day battle, and he was never recovered until we were notified this year that they have positively identified him through the efforts of it's called the Defense POW/MIA Accounting Agency, and we have George Winslet is his nephew, lives here in Oceano with his brother Bill, I think, lives here too, and he has a sister and another cousin, and those are his surviving closest relatives. And so George went to San Francisco back in 2010 and gave DNA, and they were able to use the DNA when they recovered. So it's been quite a project. So anyway, we will be having a funeral. It'll be August 18th, next Friday at 11 a.m. at the Arroyo Grande Cemetery. It'll be full military honors. There's going to be a lot of people there, so everybody that would like to come is welcome to attend and pay their respects to our Marine.
And be buried next to his mother.
He's going to be, yes, his mother, who it was her only son. And so she, all her life, you know, not knowing where her son was. And so what we were able to do is he's going to be buried with her at the cemetery. They're going to put him right with her. And that's made the family very, very happy. Brings a sense of peace and relief that he's finally home after 74 years been missing.
And if people see flags on some of our...
we're going to Los Angeles on the... We were supposed to go on the 17th, but now it's the 16th, and it's going to be later in the day. But we're... Monday, we're going to decorate. I got permission from Mr. Ogren to decorate. We're going to have flags on all the flag... on our light posts in town, because there... we will be a procession that will come through here, but it'll probably be late at night. We were going to have everybody standing out with flags to welcome, but there will be the opportunity on the day of the funeral when they leave Marshall Spoo's on 13th. They're going to go out to 4th Street and all the way down Grand Avenue with the Patriot Guard motorcycle group that they do. They're nationwide that escort all kinds of other military things. And then also the Estrella Warbirds will be doing a flyover. There'll be 13 Marines coming to do the actual service. There'll be... seven riflemen for the 21-gun salute, and then they'll have six pallbearers and the chaplain from the Marine Corps. And I say the Estrella Warbirds will be flying their World War II planes. Mm-hmm. So that'll be precisely at 11 a.m. So if you want to see the Warbirds, they'll be there. Five Cities Fire Authority will be there with the big ladder truck and the big flag. Great. And as well, I think all the other law enforcement and agencies around will be there too. So. And then we'll be coming back to the depot for lunch.
Do we need to carpool?
Yeah. So we're going to have to do some kind of traffic.
And Linda, you should be acknowledged for your effort, in this ceremony. It was really terrific and quite a long project.
We just knew he needed... We have a memorial, in our World War II memorial over at the depot that the Women's Club built in 43. They built their clubhouse. So and the town was very... we had a lot of men that went to the served in World War II, and like the barber had his Pat Corey's barber shop down where Sylvester's is now. He had all the men's pictures on the wall. They're bringing the pictures, so we have like over 100 over here in the depot of the. They're from Arroyo Grande and Pismo and Oceano. So a lot of the guys came home and went to work here. You know, we lived out their lives here, and there was eight that from World War II that were killed. And so out of those eight, they were all accounted for except for George Murray. And so now he's been accounted for, so we're complete. So.
And the VFW post was named
for him. The VFW post, he was the first man from the South County to be killed in the war. He was, like I said, he was 20 years old. He'd only been in for 9 months. He had turned 20 on November 6th and was killed November 20th. So it was quite... He was just an Oceano boy, liked to go fishing on the beach, and he ran musk, you know, we used to be able to hunt in the lagoon back then.
Duck hunting?
Yeah. And muskrat, they had muskrat traps in the lagoon. There was a little lady that lived here in town that had a little boat and went around, and he used to do that too and catch the muskrats.
What are muskrats?
They're like, what are they? Like a
like
beaver
raccoons?
Type?
Yeah, raccoons. Say kind of a half between a raccoon and a beaver.
Yeah. I don't think you really see much of them anymore, huh?
Trapped them.
I haven't seen any raccoons in a while.
I have raccoons.
Come to Halcyon.
We have lots of raccoons still.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I used to have all
anyway,
the time.
I just wanted to get
so
that
yeah,
to
the yeah,
the
depot will be all decked out in red, white, and blue, and it's a big, big event for us to bring our guy home. It's been a long, a lot of meetings, a lot of things, but they're bringing a lot of them home now.
That's good.
It's a great program.
Yeah.
Yeah. Anyway, move on to future agenda items.
So next meeting we have to will be consideration of the final budget for 2017-18. And that is to take our estimated ending balances at June 30th and roll those into next year for reserve analysis or reserve designations. So that's going to be the issue of focus between now and the next board meeting.
Okay. Is there any other items to come before this board tonight? Have a motion.
I'll make a motion to adjourn.
Second.
Adjourned. At 7:40.
7:39.